Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now I'm joined by our regular parenting expert, clinical child psychologist, Dr. David Coleman. Hello, David.
Good morning, Claire. How are you doing?
You're very welcome again to the programme and thank you for being with us. So let's get straight to it here. People have been getting in touch on 51551. This listener says, "Hi, my daughter is off to Irish college this weekend. She's so nervous. She's 13 and a real worrier. How do I help settle her nerves and try and get her to focus on the fun she will have with her friends? There are a good few of her pals going with her, but she always gets uptight and nervous during the build-up to doing something new or going somewhere new. What advice would you have?"
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the most important thing really is just to recognize that the anxiety that she's feeling is in fact perfectly normal, perfectly natural, and actually probably a good thing, because what it means is that she's just going to be, you know, a little bit on alert. She's going to be kind of wary. She's going in with her eyes open because she's already anticipating, you know, that there might be some challenges or that things might be difficult or that she has a lot of work to do maybe in terms of settling in and getting herself, you know, into the whole swing of Irish college and whatever. So that's the first bit. So talk to her a lot about how the feelings that she has are completely normal. And then also, though, see, does she have any strategies for trying to reduce her own anxiety physiologically? So does she have anything like a breathing exercise, or does she ever do meditation type things or mindfulness type exercise or anything that just allows her to kind of calm her body down? Because if she can get her body calm, then she can begin to challenge some of the maybe the negative thinking that might be underlying some of that worry that she has. So fears that she's not going to make friends, fears that she's going to end up in a room with, you know, girls that she's not going to like, fears that she's not going to like the food, fears that, you know, she won't be able to speak Irish or whatever the fears are. And so then once you've helped her kind of, I suppose, calm herself down, then you can begin to help her focus on the potential good things that are there. But I think if you just try to move too quickly to helping her to try and see the good things, I think she won't be able to focus on them and pay attention to them and really take heed of them, because she'd be still caught up in all the worries. So you have to acknowledge the worry first, acknowledge what the worry might be about, then focus a little bit on calming herself physically a little bit, and then you go back to all of the good stuff that's going to be there, all of the fun that she's going to have, all of the crack, all of the potential for making new friends. And yeah, and again, maybe you might be bringing her back to, you know, other situations she's been in where she was worried before and then it all turned out great, because again, that kind of reflection in a positive way can sometimes be difficult if we're caught up in the anxiety. But that ultimately is the kind of thing that really helps us, when we can actually realize, oh, I've done this before.
Yeah.
You know, it's slightly different this time, but it was okay the last time. I'll cope again this time.
And really useful for that child and for the parent as well to learn about coping techniques, because this isn't going to go away. You know, if this child is anxious about new experiences, it's going to be really useful to have these strategies in your back pocket.
For sure. And, you know, the kind of the positive self-talk or positive affirmations are just so helpful for any of us at any stage. It's accessing them, I think, when we actually are in the midst of the anxiety that's really difficult for most of us, which is why we have to have the initial strategy to try and just reduce the kind of the physiological impact of the anxiety, reduce the adrenaline that might be flowing a little bit, get your heart rate down. And that allows your kind of your upstairs kind of rational thinking part of your brain to refocus on the potential good, you know, the positives, as opposed to where it was. While the anxiety is high physiologically, it's just focused on all the potential negatives and what might go wrong. And mm-hmm. and that's often where we get stuck. We just can't access the potential positives and the positive affirmations and the reminders that we're actually good enough, that we're actually, you know, well able to cope in the different situations.
Now, I'm sure lots of parents would echo this sentiment that we have had expressed by a texter this morning getting in touch about the summer holidays, David, and this long stretch ahead. This parent has a teenage girl who doesn't have anyone to pal around with during the summer holidays, and she's too old for summer camps, etc. And that is a difficult period, isn't it? I mean, maybe some older teenagers might have a job or babysitting to do, but it's on those sort of shoulder years, too old for summer camps, too young to work, and lots of weeks stretching out ahead of them with nothing to do.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's a challenge for all families, you know, just keeping kids occupied, because the danger, of course, is that if we don't help them find something more useful to do, they're going to just end up probably on their phones for the whole summer and sitting in their bedroom. And, you know, that can have all sorts of unintended negative consequences as well, because I think, kids almost forget. It's interesting. I go away with teenagers every summer. We run these Headspace Adventure summer camps, and but there are no phones, no internet connected devices at all allowed for the week that the young people are there. And it is remarkable, their experience of not having their phone. I mean, I think they miss their phones initially, but then, you know, when they actually are in an environment where, you know, they're busy obviously doing different kind of adventure activities, but also having a chance just to reflect and just to be children again in many ways. So I think that's, you know, the real challenge. So, you know, if you don't have any kind of natural, or if she hasn't worked out any kind of natural job that she might do, do you have extended family? That might be the place to look to see, is there somebody who could either take her for a week, maybe just to offer her a different venue, different location, different environment to be in for a week? Is there somebody who could maybe offer her some kind of, you know, small job, even if she's not of an actual age to be working, that she could be, you know, properly paid and all those kinds of things. But maybe there's, yeah, someone within the extended family who might just be able to kind of keep her a little bit more occupied. And then the other thing, I suppose, is to just consider that even though she mightn't be, you know, kind of the cool camps or whatever other kind of camps there are, there may well still be other things for her age group, you know, and sometimes that just requires looking a little bit more broadly. And so it might be something, you know, to do with art or drama, you know, that actually will have a really wide ranging mix of ages. So there will be peers her own age that actually might be, again, just something completely new that she mightn't have ever considered. And that could, in fact, be something not just that will occupy her for a week of the summer, but mm-hmm. also might just give her a long term, you know, kind of lifelong interest in something as well.
Maybe if she could help out with some of the camps or clubs that she might have done herself when she was younger, you know, go back in as somebody who is helping out those who are running that camp.
For sure. And any kind of volunteering actually is extraordinarily powerful for teenagers. I think it can sometimes just give them a real sense of purpose. I think it helps them just to look a little bit past their own kind of immediate life, which is where most of them are kind of stuck in the very much in the here and now. And so any kind of volunteering. And so that might be, yes, absolutely, with younger kids in summer camps, but it might also be in the local community. Maybe there's a community hospital, you know, maybe she could spend a morning, a week just going up and visiting some of the folks in some of the community hospitals who just don't get visitors otherwise. And again, really powerful, that kind of intergenerational mixing, you know, great for people in the community hospitals, but also great for the teenagers as well, mm-hmm. you know.
Well, I hope that helps that listener. Now, this next one, and we get questions in about children seeing pornography quite regularly, but it is such a big issue for parents. So this one, I found my son, who's just turned 12, looking at porn on my laptop. I have parental controls on his phone. I spoke to him about it. I tried not to make him feel guilty. I explained it's natural that he should be curious, but looking at porn was not good and it was disrespectful to women. Now, he said he heard about porn in school from older boys. He watched it on and off for 5 minutes over a few days. And I figured this out from the search history, according to this parent. But they're saying, I think I handled the whole situation badly because I was furious. He doesn't want to talk about it. He's going through puberty. And I'm worried that seeing these images may have impacted him and his development. He has an ASD diagnosis and he's in mainstream school. He's sociable, but he's not particularly interested in sport, although he does participate in football. Can you give me some advice, please? And I would reckon, David, with or without an ASD diagnosis, there are parents grappling with this problem right around the country.
I think you're absolutely correct. It's so widespread, so easily accessible. And, you know, here's a man doing all the right thing in terms of having parental controls on his phone because he's only 12. And yet still, you know, he finds a way around by accessing stuff on her laptop, which obviously doesn't have the same kind of controls. I mean, good that it sounds like it really was just curiosity and something exploratory. You know, it doesn't sound like it's an issue or a big problem for him. And I mean, it's interesting that, you know, on the one hand, the mom was saying, that she spoke to him and tried not to make him feel guilty, but on the other hand, possibly did make him feel guilty because she was so cross,
yeah.
And so upset. And I think we have to be very kind and compassionate towards ourselves and recognize that it is a huge shock and it can be really upsetting. And particularly if, as a parent, you know, you have any sense of what pornography actually is about these days, because I think, you know, for many people, certainly my generation, even in, you know, people in their 40s, you know, porn was something completely different back in our day, and what it is now is, you know, it's all video based, it's all, you know, really potentially aggressive, that, you know, there's a lot of disrespect to women, and a lot of it's horrible stuff that's there, and also, you know, it is for a lot of kids, you know, the research is showing that a lot of kids use it to try to learn about sex, you know, and so not only are they learning maybe about the mechanics of sex, but they're also then learning all these horrendous attitudes as well. And so I think it is really important that she goes back and talks to her son again, even if he's, you know, kind of struggling to cope with those kind of chats, even if he doesn't want to talk about it. I think it's still important that she goes back and again shows a lot of compassion towards him, a lot of understanding, a lot of empathy, a lot of warmth, you know, about the fact that this is probably something very natural in terms of his curiosity. And yet, you know, it's really important that he has a context for what it is that he might have seen or what it is that he might see in the future, because it probably goes completely against that mom and dad's, you know, core values and beliefs. And so she needs to have opportunities now to talk with him about her views about sex and sexuality and relationships and about consent and about, you know, things being equal and things being enjoyable and pleasant and just, you know, the kindness that's there for most people in the sex that they're having, as well as the love. And that's entirely devoid from what he will have been seeing with pornography. So unfortunately, I think for most parents now, it's almost just something that we will have to bring up. Even if you haven't ever discovered that your child is watching porn, you can almost assume that by the age of 12, most boys will have seen some kind of pornography. And so we do have to give them a context within which they can be just a little bit more discriminating about what it is that they're watching, as opposed to developing some belief that this is in some way normal or that this is in some way mainstream, that this is the way sex could or should be. So
it's just such a huge burden on parents, David, because you mentioned there, and I wrote it down, you know, developing horrendous attitudes towards sex and sexuality because of what they're watching. So now it is the job of parents to try and counteract this bombardment of, you know, the stuff that's coming online via pornography. It's our job then to say, no, you mustn't pay attention to what you're seeing there. You have to learn that these are the boundaries. This is consent. This is what an equal and trusting relationship looks like. That is the job now of the parent. That is a huge job of work, isn't it?
Yeah, now it's always been the job of a parent, but we just didn't have quite such a landslide of opposition to it or alternative viewpoints, because again, there was probably a lot more commonality amongst communities in terms of the attitudes and values and what people might have been talking about when it came to sex and sexuality, and how that was portrayed in the kind of media that, again, in my generation, that we saw when we were teenagers. And so this is the challenge. But this is the challenge with almost every issue now when it comes to kids, is that, you know, they are being influenced from far and wide. It's not just their local community and their peers that are the influence. It's this worldwide, you know, mix of good and bad. But, you know, predominantly, I think, you know, it's bad. And so the fact that kids have the internet in their pocket with smartphones is just a disaster. I mean, I know I say it time and time again, but if we could roll the clock back at all.
It's terrifying, David, for parents. And we're coming to the end now, but it's something that we must come back to, because parents need to be properly equipped, is what we're learning, to deal with this. And how do you do it is the question I'd say most parents will be asking. But listen,
informing yourself is a really good start, you know. So go webwise.ie is a great resource for parents, just in terms of understanding about the different apps and all the different potential dangers out there for kids. It's just a nice starting point, but there's probably more work to be done after that.
And we will talk to you about that again, because the questions keep coming on that one. David, thank you very much. That's David Cole.